Tuesday, June 26, 2007, upon further review, episode number 41. Well, we're back from Norway, and we're ready for a summer's worth of shows. And in this episode, we're going to be taking ourselves very seriously. There's serious business afoot in the world. Lots of things to talk about, important things to discuss. And that's why we're going to talk about games. That's right, the serious business of play. Okay, upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Leah.
And we'd like to welcome everybody back. That's right, we're back in audio form, not video form this week. So it's been a while since we've spoken to you audio-wise. I guess we had some audio commentary on the DVD, but that might not really count. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we hope everyone out there is doing well, and we wanted to thank everyone who has sent us some very nice comments and emails and things like that, especially Chris, who has sent us this barrage of comments, all of which we love. We are very, very pleased and excited and happy that that he's been so into it. So thanks, Chris, and thanks to everybody who's been checking us out. I think DI commented and a bunch of other people, too. So that's great, and we hope you will
keep
that up.
The video weaned out to our creme de la creme.
That's correct. That's
only
correct.
Only the true...
The elite, the ones who don't
UFRs.
Use iTunes. Well, I mean, I'm working on that. I'm actually, what I have to do is I have to save it in movie format, MOV format. The problem is that there's not an easy converter. So the only way I can do it is to render it again. And that is a process of, let's say, 8 hours. So I'm going to have to do that overnight. And so I'll get you folks, you iTunes folks, I'll get you a movie format of this soon. And also, I want to remind everyone that if anyone is interested out there in getting the DVD of this, there is a DVD of it. And it is not super deluxe in terms of the labeling, but if I do say so myself, I think it's a pretty good DVD because I worked a long time on it. And so if you guys are interested in checking that out, let us know and we can work out some limited form of remuneration, you know.
That's a good word.
Yeah, thank you. If I can pronounce it correctly. Remuneration. So.
All right, so back to work, and we've decided to do it with fun and games.
That's right. Back to work, back to reality, as they say. And we've got three games to throw at you this week, in fact. Mm-hmm. We're going to start with two board games. A couple people have asked us if we were going to do another board game review, because I think we've only done Munchkin, I believe. And so we said, which is a card game, anyway.
Hard to believe.
Which is, I know. Well, and if you guys saw our game closet, you'd really find it hard to believe. Clea and I both like games, and I am a huge board game fan. In fact, if any of you live in the New York area and feel like playing some board games, let us know. You know? So we're going to start with a game called Dungeon Twister. Now, we got this while we were in Norway. I'd seen this around before, but I had never really checked it out in detail. And you'll have a chance to see a little bit, you know, or hear, I should say, a little bit about what this game is all about. So we're going to start by reviewing that.
It's a two-person game, right?
It's a two-person game. If you get, I think it's the second expansion, allows you to play three and or four players, but it starts as a two-person player game. Then we're going to move on to review a board game called Descent Journeys in the Dark, which is kind of cool. Just the name of it. Descent Journeys in the Dark.
Oh my god. There
it's been a while, you know? I want to play with my toys. And then finally, we're going to conclude with a game that Clea has been playing for the Nintendo Wii.
Yeah, it fits with the dungeon theme.
Right. It's called Super Paper Mario. Death to the Mushroom. No, I'm just kidding. It's just called Super Paper Mario. But it's a game which Clea has been having a lot of fun with. And
spaghetti.
Yeah, exactly.
Lasagna.
So that'll be for the different non-dark set of our audience that likes light themes. So we're going to start with Dungeon Twister, and this is a game which is originally designed by a French designer. I should say, by the way, for those of you not familiar with board games generally speaking, I mean, everyone's played board games, but the sort of new board game world out there, you've basically got two major companies. One is a company called Fantasy Flight Games, which puts out board games in the U.S., and I say major because they're the ones who get a lot of computer game, like World of Warcraft has been transferred into a board game, and StarCraft, and a bunch of those games have ended up with them. And then you have a German company, which is called Rio Grande Games, and a bunch of, I think it's German, I believe, but a lot of games that have come from Europe, including Settlers of Catan is a big one that a lot of people like, Carcassonne. All of those are what are called Euro games, and they've been called that because they tend to be sort of more abstract strategy, more, you know, sort of the theme isn't as important as sort of the thought process. So they're a lot more, I think they're coming from like the chess and the go angle, whereas a lot of the American games are coming from theme-based things, you know, so fantasy games, science fiction games, things like that. And I don't know that there's a, I mean, there are differences between them. I like both sets, but in any case, this one is, it's in that Euro game category, but it comes out of France, and France hasn't been that big in the board game industry recently, so it's interesting to see it. You can find the website for this game. The company is Asmodee. You can find them at www.asmodee-us.com, and if you go there and do the search for Dungeon Twister, you will find it.
Yeah, you can just go to Our Games, and then it will list it there.
Yeah, once you get to the site, you click on Our Games, and it's there. So basically, Dungeon Twister, as Clea said, is a two-player game, and essentially the way it works is, the basic game, you have a set of eight tiles, and the board is basically composed of those eight tiles. And before the game, you shuffle them, and then you lay them out in, I think it's two wide and four long, and each of you sit at one end of the table.
Right.
And they're all face down to begin with. Then each of the players gets the same group of characters, and the basic premise is that all the characters have been thrown into a dungeon by this evil wizard who's really bored with life because he's immortal, so he's just decided to entertain himself by watching groups of people try to get out of this dungeon. And basically the way that you win is by scoring, I think it's 5 points before the other person scores. And the way you score is you can get one of your characters out of the dungeon in the other person's direction. So your guys start, you know, on your side of the dungeon. They have to go all the way through the dungeon to the other person's side. Or you can score a point by killing one of your opponent's characters off. Or you can score points by getting treasure and things like that. But the basic ways to do it are to kill one of your characters, your opponent's characters off, or to get your characters to the finish line.
And you could make it more points, right? Or you could,
yeah, if you wanted to, you could adjust it more, fewer, depending. Yep, you could do that.
So it's not a matter of getting whoever gets all of their characters out first or the most characters out or something like that. It's not that.
Right. And it's a combination of things, too. I mean, most of the time when Clea and I have played a couple times, and I played once with a friend of mine, too, and you get a character out, you kill a character, you get a treasure. Like, people, it's not generally people do only one thing. They kind of mix things up to try to get the 5 points. And then, I guess, without going into great detail, the thing that really makes the game strategic is two things, basically. First of all, each of you have eight characters that you get that are the same. They have the same abilities, these characters, as the other set. So you have, let's say you'll have a thief, and the thief's ability is the thief can move twice as fast as the warrior can. You have the troll who's really powerful in a fight, but he's not very fast. You have the goblin who's not worth much, except if you can get him out of the dungeon, if you can have him escape, you get 2 points instead of the usual one. And each character, each player has the same group of characters. So I have a goblin, Clea has a goblin. I have a thief, Clea has a thief, and so on. And what makes the game particularly strategic, so one is that balance, that everyone has the same characters. The second thing that's strategic is the fact that as you're going through the dungeon, as you come to each dungeon square that are face down and you turn them up, that shows you what the map is like. And so basically the map is different every time you play. What makes it interesting, though, is that each dungeon square has a little gear on it that you can actually turn the whole tile left or right. So in other words, if you're on that gear, someone may be running down a passageway and thinking they're going to escape. You can actually turn it so that all of a sudden now they're facing to the right instead of facing straight ahead of them. So every aspect of this game has been thought ahead so that there really literally is no luck in this game. There's no dice rolling. There's no, you know, drawing cards to get things. It's not like that. It's completely based upon... Where's the luck?
On what way it happens to turn.
No, like, because you control how it turns.
Well, yeah, but there was like that one time I got you stuck, and that one guy, he couldn't move for like the longest time.
Yeah, but
that
then
was luck.
Yeah, but no, it wasn't luck.
Yes, it was. No, because I could have lucky that you happened to be in that particular spot, and all of the tiles made it so there was walls on all four sides of.
Yeah, well, no, but I could have gone there and released him sooner if I wanted to. Actually, what ended up happening was funny because Clea had me trapped in this one set of the corners. It was my troll, and then I managed to turn the tile that one of her characters was on that was right next to that other tile. So basically I turned her so she was facing the troll. The troll went and then punched her, knocked her out, and then like the tile turned back. It was hilarious. Like that's all the troll basically did. His job is to stand there, wait until somebody showed up, then bash them, and then the whole thing would vanish again. So that was kind of funny. But there's no dice rolling. There's nothing like that. And you know, everything about the game, even in terms of combat, when you fight somebody, each of you have a set of cards, right? And the cards are not drawn. You have all the cards in front of you. So let's say that I'm fighting a warrior and Clea's fighting with the troll or something like that. we take a card, and each of the cards has on it a value that can be added to the person's strength. You compare them against each other. Whoever has the higher strength wins the combat. But the interesting thing is that most of those cards are one use only. So I can throw down my plus six, right? And that's a really powerful card. But if I use it, I can't use it again for the rest of the game. So you have to conserve your cards, your better cards, and you have to, and so all that kind of stuff is really interesting, I think, and contributes to the sense that this game is really kind of a strategy game overlaid onto a fantasy theme. It's not, you know, I mean, there are fantasy characters, but it's more of a strategy game that uses fantasy themes, I think.
Yeah, I think that's true.
So, I mean, what did you think about the game as you were playing it, Clea? I happened to win, despite the fact that she trapped my poor troll. And I think we've played twice, if I'm not mistaken.
I only remember playing once.
Maybe. Well, I thought we played it. Well, anyway. So, what have you thought about it?
I guess I didn't like how the game ended. Like, it felt like suddenly it was over. You know what I mean?
I guess so.
I didn't like the scoring aspect. I felt like I wanted there to be... And this happened with Descent as well. I'm used to games having some kind of ending. And in both games... It's, oh, we reached the points, or, oh, we reached the limit on that in the game. I won. You know, even when my characters are, you know, strategically placed all over, I have things set. You know, I mean, do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. But part of that, too, can be an adjustment in terms of how long we make the games. Because, as you said, we can add more points to that you have to get or stuff like that as well.
Yeah.
So that can be done also. But, yeah, there's no distinct... There's no
finish line.
Yeah, in Monopoly, you can sort of see it coming, right? I mean, you keep gathering money and you keep gathering money, and eventually the other person's like going into hock and selling all their houses and then selling all their plot property. So you can kind of tell when the end is coming. But this one, it can turn very quickly.
Yeah.
But I kind of like that in the sense that you don't ever feel like... There are some games where it just feels inevitable. You know, you're kind of like just playing out the string, and you know what's going to happen. And I kind of like the fact that things can turn quickly, especially in this game. If you make a really good strategic decision, all of a sudden the person's like, oh, wow, I didn't even see that. And it kind of can flip around on you. So I kind of like that aspect.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I know what you mean. It can, the beginning can be rushed a little bit. The characters themselves are, you know, reasonably well put together. I mean, the cardboard stock is pretty good quality and stuff like that. And there are a couple of expansions for this game. More expansions in France. There's actually two or three more French expansions. But it was funny, I went over to the message boards there, and people were all bitching about that. You know, this is ridiculous. Why aren't there more American expansions? And I'm like, you know, since most of the board game, I don't think that there were people crying about the lack of, you know, extra expansions for Monopoly or something, or one of those games in other countries. You know what I mean? So it's a little bit silly to make this so American-centric. You know,
how hard is it to translate it into English, though, Greg?
Well, I mean, it's probably not hard, but it's not their first priority.
They want to make it marketable. You hire a translator. I mean, because these expansions, in some cases, are just like a page description of the different rules.
Well, no.
So how hard is that? Just hire a translator for an hour to translate that document?
I think it's harder than you think. Then they got to figure out how to print. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying
to
that it's...
figure out how to print it?
But these are not huge. This is not a huge company, though. Asmodee is not like Parker Brothers or Milton Bradley or something. You know?
They probably just don't know the level of interest, and they will soon do it. I don't know. Or that, or they're being French.
That's right. We do not need to make expansions for you stupid Americans. All right, what do you want to say for a rating?
7.
1, I feel like we've been giving a lot of 7s. 2, I feel like it's better than that.
We've been giving just as many 8s and 9s.
Okay, 7. So a 7 for Dungeon Twister, but definitely check it out. You can buy it, by the way, from their site directly, I think. And you can also get it from a number of game stores in the area. They even have a little thing that says where to buy. And if you click on that...
And those of you that like...
It'll go to...
D&D.
A list of retailers.
Yeah. This game, and even more Descent, we'll get into that, provides an opportunity to kind of create a dungeon and have dungeon characters, you know, in a fairly easy format.
More Descent than this, though,
yeah.
Because this is so much strategy-oriented. That's the other thing, by the way. If you really don't like pure strategy games, you might not like this as much. Because some people like having dice and like having some luck.
Yeah.
And there's really very little luck in this game. I mean, leaving aside my poor troll. But most of the time, there's really not much luck that's associated. So.
Yeah.
But you should be able to get these games. Yeah, it has a list of retailers who sell the games, which you can get it from. So I think it cost in Norway, like, I think it was like $25 or $30, something like that.
Yeah,
so it's worth trying. But we think it's pretty good. So 7 out of 10 for Dungeon Twister. Okay.
Descent.
Yes. So on to Descent. Next game on the docket is a game called Descent. And you can find this at www.fantasyflightgames.com. FantasyFlightGames.com/Descent. And this is the other thing. We did a Euro game for a first review. This is an American game. This is that American company that I was talking about. And basically this game is, as Clea said, a kind of sort of a board game version of Dungeons & Dragons, yeah. I guess you might say.
They provide you hallways, rooms, wells, pits,
miniatures,
yeah. Lots of miniatures.
And dice.
I could, there we have like dragons and all sorts of little plastic things.
Yep, lots of stuff. And the basic premise, this is another one of those games that I had been thinking about and kind of playing around with the idea of getting, and then I looked at it and said, oh, I think I'll pick it up. First of all, I'll say it's a huge box. Let me just say that, okay? When you get the game, it's a huge box. It's heavy. And when you open it up, there are roughly 650,000 characters that you have to open. Like, there's pieces. Yeah, there's like 12 like sheets of cardboard things to punch out, and then there's like, which is cool if you like that kind of stuff, but be aware it'll take a little while to set it all up at the beginning. But
right. But
it's very nicely put together. You know, it's high quality. It's plastic, but it's, you know, the plastic is high quality, the characters that you have. And, you know, the only thing I'll say is that you have to be very careful. You need to have some Ziploc bags there, because there are lots and lots of loose characters. And I've seen people do this where they just throw the whole business back into the button. No, that'll take forever. If you ever try to set it up again,
that'd be stupid.
You would never be able to do that. So, but it does, if you're careful, will all fit back in the box once it's all done. And the basic premise is that you've got a group of people that play the heroes in this game. And there's something like, I don't know, 25 or 30 heroes you can choose from that you draw from a deck to see what you get. And then you have another person who plays the Overlord, who's basically the guy who puts monsters and traps down on the board.
Right.
And the Overlord's job is to defeat the heroes by taking conquest tokens. So you take conquest tokens by killing the hero, by you know, blocking them, by doing different things to the hero. And the hero's job is basically to get to the end of each quest, win the quest before they get all their conquest token taken. And so this is a game which is interesting in the sense that as you're going through, the map is kind of being, you know, the heroes don't know what they're going into, so the game is gradually being built as they're going through it.
It's like D&D. I mean, you have a dungeon master kind of thing with the Overlord, except
he's competitive.
He's much more
in this
active
one.
And actually competitive, wanting to try to have you lose.
Yeah.
Which technically, you know, dungeon masters shouldn't be like, but some people have that experience.
Not me.
And this can be two players or more, although we've played it obviously just the two of us, since we're lonely up here in the Bronx. And I personally would not recommend it as a two-player game, because it is very D&D-like. For me, I felt it was very D&D-like. It was very a lot of characters with different points and different things that I had to think about, and different strategy of how to fight off 50 million people that Greg is throwing at me. And that kind of thing... I mean, I guess if I was an 11-year-old boy, I would get into it, but I want my companions. I want other people working with me, strategizing with me.
And let me just say...
And then also when we're waiting for Greg to do his stuff, we can chat and catch up and talk about life.
Let me just say, too, that Clea has played Dungeons & Dragons with me. I am a longtime Dungeons & Dragons player, and if people think that's nerdy tough, I think it's cool. And Clea is a very good player of these games, and she's a very good sport, and she played this game very well. I mean, neither of us had played before, so both of us were kind of frantically looking at the rule book and doing all that stuff, and I'm sure we both made mistakes. Like,
yeah.
I looked, and I think there's some things I would do to help you out if we played as two heroes again. I think there's things that we could do to balance it out more for you. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those games that's... I'll say about the D&D thing, too. In Dungeons & Dragons, D&D can be much more story-oriented. At least that's the way I make
it.
I
mean,
this is much more hack and slash and sort of that thing. And so
I meant more the battle part of D&D.
You're right.
This is quintessentially the battle part of D&D.
You're right, and it would help to have more than one person. Probably the ideal would be to have, like, three people plus the Overlord, like four total people playing, something like that.
You don't want to have too many people, or it might be a little bit overwhelming.
Right, exactly, and it would take a while. The cool thing about it is that there are these different quests, so you set the board up differently, and each one has different kind of things that you have to accomplish, and then there are expansions that they've gotten where you have other things that you have to accomplish as well, and I think that's kind of neat. And you do get the feeling as you're kind of going through it. You know, Clea, I think, enjoyed having like these things where monsters were getting knocked out and taken down, and up until this one room that she got to, it was relatively easy. even, I thought. And then this one room, she kind of ran into a bunch of trouble and there wasn't much she could do about it. But it was pretty even up until that point. And yeah. I think that's kind of neat. I think the way that they have it balanced is pretty good. Now, there's been a lot of discussion on the boards that the opening game with, like, say, three heroes, is balanced too much in favor of the heroes, and the expansion is balanced too much in favor of the Overlord. I don't know if that's true or not. Yeah. But in any case, it's been a very successful game. I mean, and one of the good things about both these things we talked about is that board games are clearly having a renaissance, and I think that's great. I mean, I like computer games, and we've obviously talked about video games before on here, but I love the social aspect of board games. I love the tactile thing of being able to get them out and touch the pieces and move them around, and as Clea said, talk with people, and the social aspect of it, which is the great thing about D&D too, is that it's social, and the stories that you can tell as a result of it. So if this indicates that board games are making a comeback, then I think that's cool, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there are a bunch of little mini things that I think also would improve with more people in certain quests. Like, I really didn't have very many weapons or armor that I could choose to upgrade my characters.
That's true. Well, you didn't have a chance to get a lot of money. I mean, you got right. some money, but... But yeah, and as I say, you kind of got buzzsawed. But oh, I forgot to mention, as the Overlord, you draw cards from this deck to help you play monsters and traps. And so it was interesting sort of strategizing how I was going to play those cards. And there were a couple occasions where, you know, Clea would be like attacking monster and then she starts running this one direction and I would like throw a trap at her so she falls into this pit. And all of that kind of balance, I think, is kind of interesting. I could see where if you play badly, and there's been discussion on the boards of some Overlords who really go for blood, you know, it's like death. And all to, and they say what, and then they come on the boards and they say, you know, no one wants to play this game. I don't understand. It's like, I don't understand why no one. It's like, I can't imagine why. But there are frankly bad dungeon masters who play D&D like that too, whose job is to embarrass their players, and that's not what I'm about.
Players.
This game, you know, you have to be competitive, but you don't have to be a jerk about it, I guess I'd say. So, but in general, I think it's a very well put together game. Fantasy Flight Games is a pretty good company that has a pretty good rep, and so yeah, and it seems to be doing very well. And it's very successful, and there's a computer game being made of the board game, and there's been lots of board games made of the computer games by this company, as I already said. So that's pretty cool. So what do you want to say for a rating on this?
8.
Yeah, so you liked this a little bit better than Dungeon Twister. Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. I would say an 8 for Descent. Very good game in a lot of ways, and with Clea and I play, the next time we play more games, we will report back to you on what happened. I did win the first game, but it was very close. Yeah, once we get some friends. We just need to get some friends who can come here and not be so busy. I have to work.
Greg's band is going to be in town on Saturday.
That's true.
So
maybe we can get them to play.
Force them.
Which reminds me, if you're in the area in New York, my band playing a show, The Underscore, come check us out. Acoustic set. Okay, rant over. So 8 out of 10. All right, last game on the docket, and I'll let Clea speak about this extensively, is Super Paper Mario. And you can find this at wii.nintendo.com. And if you go there, you'll see a Super Mario link, which you can click on. And as Clea may or may not have seen...
Yes, no, it's very interactive.
Oh, you did see that? You can flip the site from 2D to 3D. Clea, you want to talk a little bit about the premise?
Is this the third or the fourth Paper Mario?
If you count Legend of the Seven Star, which isn't really one, this is Paper Mario Super Third. The one thing I'll say before Clea goes on her discussion of it is when we got this game, and I had been looking to get it for Clea for a while because she loves Mario stuff, as I've said before. But I got it for her, and this was very minimalist. Like, you know, the rule book and everything was just kind of thin, and I was like, I wonder how this is going to work. But as usual for Nintendo, they know what they're doing, and as you go through the game, you figure stuff out. So why don't you explain what the game...
So the first two Paper Marios are kind of a role-play, story-based games.
Right, Marios, yep.
And the Mario is 2D, so everything's kind of like their paper. And the way that they would fight things, they would do it on a, in particular, fight area. So once you came across an animal that you were going to have to fight, it would take you to a stage where you would fight that animal.
Which is, by the way, very standard points. RPG console stuff. Like Final Fantasy is like that, too.
Kind of, yeah. Except Mario made it a stage with curtains and
right, with an audience and people cheering.
Well, the second one, you had people cheering and
that's
you got
extra
points.
That's true, the second one. Yeah.
So this one breaks off from that a little bit where you can go 2D, but you can also go 3D. So the screen and what you're seeing can change once you go into 3D world. You can see things that maybe you wouldn't have seen in the 2D perspective. Mm-hmm. And also when you come across characters, it's actually like old Super Mario, like 4.
Where it's just a site, where it's just a scroller,
where you just jump on it, yeah. And you know, you jumping on blocks and knocking things off. It's very much like
a platform game.
It's kind of old school. But it still is a little bit role playing, so that you're still going and meeting people and talking to people.
And you get items too, right?
There's storyline, you're getting items, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and the story is pretty involved. I mean, one of the things that's interesting talking about translation like we were before, they did a really good job at Nintendo of America in translating it into a very hip kind of, you know, there are a lot of inside jokes. There's some, you know, sort of cultural jokes that get made in here. And yes, are these games kids' games? Yeah, but there's always a sense that there's a level that kids are not going to get that adults will get that's kind of funny. You know, I never feel like I'm being sort of patronized. Although, of course, we're watching an Italian plumber jump on mushrooms. I mean, there is that kind of basic issue. But
do
once you get past
get,
that...
feel patronized when an Italian plumber is jumping on mushrooms?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to go tell my chairman that that's what I spent my summer doing. If that's what I mean. Because I didn't, Tom, if you're listening. I did other things, too.
No, I did.
Oh, that's right. Clea did. So, but there's a different level that you get it at, I guess.
Right. The two previous ones, there were scene shifts at the end of chapters where you would shift to playing Princess Peach or Bowser. You didn't really do much battles with them. You were mainly just kind of furthering the storyline.
Yeah.
But in this one, you actually gain Princess Peach as a travel companion. And she can do certain things and help. And if you switch to her, she can do certain things.
Yep.
So that's an interesting feature. She's no longer the damsel in distress.
Mm-hmm.
Don't quite know what to make of that. We should probably make sure she walks like 7 steps behind us.
Right. What?
One thing I didn't like is there were certain aspects of Paper Mario that were repetitive, you know, that the same characters you kind of companion characters that you found and certain things you kind of, oh, there they are. And this one breaks away from that. It's a different world, different design, and your companions are different. And so it's good. I mean, they probably had to do it because they want to make sure we don't get bored and they're making everything new, but it does lose a little bit of that nostalgia of, now I don't know who I'm getting. And
A little bit. I will say, that's true. That's a good point. The other thing I'll say, too, since you brought up the idea of being new, this is on the Nintendo Wii, and as you guys know, I talked about this with Zelda. Some of these games are kind of transitional games into the new console, which has obviously the remote that you can point at the screen, and it's motion sensitive. This game, I think, shows a lot of earmarks of a game that's really kind of a tweener. I mean, there's a couple of times where you use the remote.
Right.
Like, when you jump on a character, you can shake the remote around, and Mario does stylish moves, which like gives you extra points, right. But it's a little bit tacked on.
Sometimes
I mean, like,
that you point it at the screen
to sort of see where something. Yeah, on
but
occasion.
The rest of the time you're holding the controller horizontally as if it was kind of
like
an old school
style, yeah.
Controller.
And while it is cool that the controller can do that, and it doesn't bother me. Like, I mean, it's fine, but you do get the sense that they haven't. Again, this is another one of those games where they don't fully use the potential of what the Wii, you know, remote is supposed to be able to ultimately do.
You don't use the nunchuck,
but that's right. Although, that would be sweet, like in Zelda. But anyway, but the graphics are good. And again, they just do a lot of clever stuff. Like, even the things you have to do. Like, there's one part in a game where you're, like, on this game show and you have to figure something out. It's cool. Like, there's a lot of different aspects of the story. And the story itself is pretty involved and engaging. Again, keeping in mind that it's at the level of you're saving the princess and there's mushrooms that you're jumping on. You know, I mean, is that... You're not going to get Schindler's List here,
this
right?
This one there's a rip in the space-time consortium.
Yes, but of course the rip has been created by Count Black, who says all his lines with da 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 Black. So I love there's some people who are like, this really has a dark edge. I'm like, come on, the dude's name is Black. Like, how seriously could you take this? But anyway, but it has the usual Nintendo polish. And you know, again, it shows that Nintendo's in-house designers, man, they know what they're doing. I mean, they always produce really good stuff in-house. Now, Nintendo's problem is that they don't often let enough out of company designers work on things. Their sort of third-party development is a problem, but in-house Nintendo really has a lot of good people. So I think this is another Miyamoto game, and Shigeru Miyamoto is the big shot behind Nintendo who came up with all the Mario stuff and everything to begin with. So
yeah, it's good. I mean, there's little mini quests, but it doesn't become annoying, and
yep.
You're able to follow the storyline and kind of move it along. It's not too easy, but it's not too tough.
There's extra areas that you can find, right? And
right.
Different places you can
right.
go.
Right, if you turn 3D.
And the 3D thing is interesting, too, because when you go into 3D, you have a little gauge, so you can only be in 3D for a little bit of time.
Right.
You can't just stay in 3D all the time, which lends a kind of interesting mechanic to it as well, I think.
Right.
Plus, you get different little characters that help you do things. So there's a lot of interesting stuff.
I have to say I enjoy it, and I enjoyed the changes, but I still preferred I think
the RPG number, element.
Well,
of the
no,
older.
Number two, where it was quite a beautiful concept that you could change into all these different shapes. You can turn into a scroll. You can turn into a boat. You can turn into
an airplane.
I mean, that was kind of cool. This doesn't have quite as many of those features. It's more utilizing your different companions. But
Super Paper Mario 2 may have these things available. Clearly, they're going to do another one. I mean, the next one up that Clea is really looking forward to is Mario Galaxy.
I don't know. I'm nervous. It's going to be too tough because sometimes they can make Mario can sometimes be really annoying with the stupid like jumping and the timing thing.
This is coming from a woman who has never lost a Mario game in the history of her existence. Clea is like 6-0 versus Mario
you
games.
You never know though.
This next one could be the next one. I'm always one game away from failure. What if I lose and then the mushrooms will win?
The mushrooms are never the enemy. They're just...
Yeah, they are.
No, they're not.
Well, okay, Bowser's the... The turtles are.
They're
well, it depends.
Just like little minions, or they you eat them and they give you...
They back the wrong horse quite a bit. You'd think at this time they would have learned, right? Anyway, what do you want to say? This is clearly, by the way, a family-friendly game. It's the kind of game that you can have fun with the family and the whole business.
Right.
So, what do you want to say for a rating?
I have answered initially every time, so why don't you go?
I think this is an 8 also. I like the fact, I think it's an excellent game. I'm always amazed at how clever and well put together these games are. But I agree that I miss some of the RPG elements. And as I say, if you're going to put it on the Wii, you really should do a little bit more with it than just have it be like, oh, look, you point the remote at the screen. You should do a little more with it than that, I think. So
okay.
I would say an 8.
I'm fine with that.
Okay. So a 7 for Dungeon Twister, an 8 for Descent, and an 8 for Super Paper Mario.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's going to do it for us for another week. We are glad to be behind the microphones and recording for you guys once again. Please again continue to give us feedback and ideas and let us know if you're interested in the DVD and let us know what you think about games and everything in the world as you know. And we will come at you guys next week. Upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
See you soon.
The proceeding was a presentation of Upon Further Review, hosted at www.furtherreview.net. As usual, all rights are reserved. If you liked what you heard, please vote for us at podcastalley.com, vitalpodcast.com, and add us to your list of favorites at podcastpickle.com. You can leave us a comment at www.furtherreview.net, drop us a line at upon@furtherreview.net, or give us a phone call or send a fax to 206-339-UFR1. That's 206-339-8371. And lastly, don't be afraid to express your opinions. We know you have them. Let them out. Feel the power. Or you could just blindly accept whatever we tell you is fact. That'll work.